It's fantastic. You know, that's America's favorite Detroit-style pizza.
Little Caesars, deep, deep dish, America's favorite Detroit-style deep dish pizza. What's important is that's a claim based on 2013 sales data.
Yeah. Dutch. You know, it takes a few years for that sales data to actually get out, so...
You can't fake it. And, you know, some bipartisan committee came out and awarded them that honor.
Yeah.
3 years ago. And you might as well keep riding the coattails.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not even going to try to compete with Detroit-style pizza. They got that.
I eat this every week. And that's why I'm in such good shape.
Yeah.
Now, I notice I'm drinking a Dr. Pepper. And neither one of these companies we've mentioned has endorsed us yet. We're in talks. So once we get to it, then we'll talk about them a lot more during our advertising commercials or what have you. You're drinking a beer. What kind of beer is this?
It's a Lagunitas Undercover Ale.
Again, another company I think we're going to start getting in talks with.
Yeah.
About sponsoring the podcast and just sponsoring our life.
Yeah.
People follow us around. They want to know what we're drinking. They'll drink it. But here's one thing I notice. You're drinking this in a pint glass. It's beautiful. I love these. You got a full beard. Mm-hmm. You're entering a beard contest in a few months. Your mustache, while thick, does not have any suds in it. Why is that? Explain to the listeners. Because I love it.
About a week ago, in the mail, I received a mysterious package.
Was it U.S. Postal Service or was it FedEx?
This was USPS.
Good.
Yeah.
You're employing and, government workers.
Well, yeah. Mysterious package. It said Whisker Dam on it. And no idea. I quickly was trying to rack my brain. Did I order this in some drunken stupor?
Oh, my Lord.
That I don't remember. But no. Certainly, I hadn't ordered anything. Open it up, and it's this this piece of copper, flat piece of copper in this leather case, and it says Whisker Dam on it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm intrigued, and I start reading the instructions, and what it does is it fits right over the top of your pint glass.
Yeah.
And prevents the beer from getting to your mustache. Because mustaches, they soak up your drink like a sponge.
It's like you don't even drink a pint.
Yeah. It's like every sip you have two sips, because you sip out of the glass, and then you suck everything out of your mustache.
Right. And that's a shame, because it messes up your mustache.
And you lose a little bit of beer in the process, sure. Too. You don't want
to
waste it.
Well, you need to be economic. It's about being green.
Mm-hmm.
Solar panels, electric cars, whisker dams. That's what we're about. We're actually about metal detecting. Welcome to Dylan and Dutch Metal Detecting, episode 14.
14 already.
14 already. Eventually we'll get to 1400.
Yeah.
This is the episode everyone's been waiting for. We're getting fan mail, snail mail. I got that FedEx package from the guy in North Korea who's going to defect.
Mm-hmm.
People all over the country, Iran. There's the medical research facility in Antarctica. They sent us mail. Took 3 months to get to us, but...
Yeah.
Because they can't just readily send mail. The astronaut just came back from the International Space Station. He was there for 360 days.
Yeah.
He sent us some type of correspondence.
He wrote a postcard to us every single day.
Yeah. It's exactly like the notebook. I sent you a letter every day.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great movie. Do you like that movie?
I think I saw it, but I don't really remember it.
It wasn't as accurate as the book, but we're not going to get into that today. You want to know why? People want to know something. How did the fight with the Balrog end?
Yeah, because it was getting pretty intense there when we left off.
We wounded it. Hit in the neck, grazed in the neck by a throwing knife, grazed in the leg, back of the knee. You're holding the meteor forged sword. I'm holding a sword and a dagger. We're still outmatched. Thing's 30 feet tall.
Yeah.
Dutch.
I think we left off where I was hacking away.
Mm-hmm.
Swinging that.
You were mad.
I was furious, and you know what? I let my rage get the best of me, I think. And I think that was my undoing at that point.
Sure. It's not a balanced attack.
No. I was swinging in rage and making some headway, I should say.
You actually were.
But I did let my rage get the best of me. If I had just controlled it a little bit more,
yeah,
that may have been the end of the fight.
It very well could have been.
But I think the Balrog noticed what was going on with me and tried to bring that out of me even more,
yeah,
so that I would be fighting more with my emotions and not with
your head.
Not with my brain. So I did have a misstep, and it was pretty tragic and sad, and just not the type of thing that you want to have happen.
No.
The Balrog was able to grab my sword and rip it from my grasp.
Sure.
And I was standing there with nothing.
No, just your wits. We talk about our wits a lot.
We do. And
it always saves our life.
And I should say, it probably did in this situation, too.
Of course it did.
Because I didn't just stand there dumbfounded and, you know, wondering what was going on. I immediately reacted.
Right, and can we just explain this to the listeners?
Yeah.
Dutch, in college, you're a competitive gymnast.
Yeah.
You were alternate on the Olympic team.
My junior year, yeah.
Your junior year.
Yeah.
You started putting on a clinic, and it was amazing.
Flip yeah.
after flip, corkscrew, it couldn't touch you. It was throwing a sword at you.
Mm-hmm.
It was as if you weren't even there, but you were.
Yeah. Instinct definitely took over at that moment. And I was jumping and dodging and desperately looking around, trying to find a weapon.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you...
Yeah.
Describe what you were up to at this point.
When he threw your sword, I thought, uh-oh, I could catch swords. So I'm behind it. So I'm trying to slash at its legs and at its torso. It had the shield, dropped it. In the last episode we mentioned that it dropped it.
Mm-hmm.
Now it rears up on me because he knows he's not going to get any hits off you. Once he rears up on me, I think that's when you start looking for the meteor sword. Luckily, your echolocation is on point.
Mm-hmm.
But for about 2 minutes, I am eye to eye with this Balrog, mainly because I got up on part of a mountainous hill. So I'm looking at him. He points a sword at me. He says something in some language. I don't know what it said, but it drove chills up my spine. That's when I realize I'm not getting anywhere with the sword. One. I'm not getting anywhere with the dagger. Two. My throwing knives, I'm not going to use them just yet, because I want to use them when he's not watching. I've been hitting him okay. And it's kind of turned the tide of the fight a little bit. So I think, what's the one thing that all the books we read in the Nicaraguan library, what's the one weapon that we know nothing about against a Balrog? Nunchucks.
Mm-hmm.
I took them out, and I'm not going to say I'm good with them, but I'm a surgeon with my nunchucks. Flipping them around, I did only one flip, but he was trying to throw a sword in. I was hitting him every time. Like, every time his sword would come in, it would get hit about 6 or 7 times. And I'd knock him in the head. Eventually, 3 or 4 passes go by. I hit him in the head again. His helmet cracks. I didn't even know it could crack.
No.
Comes off. What was underneath that helmet? This face. I can only describe as some type of cross between the Predator and Donald Trump. Some weird hair. That's about the time you get your sword back. But what was that weapon you kept strapped to your back?
The mace.
That's right, the mace.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, normally I have a mace somewhere on me. And I had one on strapped to my back, and I was swinging it around while you were face-to-face with it, mm-hmm. and landing some good blows. And I mean, I had to run probably a good 200 yards because it had chased me all over the place when I was unarmed. I was running at it. It sensed me. It knew I was coming. And,
first of all,
yeah,
you can always spot a fisherman 100 yards away.
Mm.
Go.
I saw the sword, went for the sword, and, picked it up. But like I said, the Balrog knew I was coming.
Oh, yeah.
Turned around, and that was the first time I saw the face, when it turned around and looked at me.
Yeah.
And, man, those eyes.
I can't get them out of my head. Even when I'm sleeping, I have a nightmare, it's those eyes, like, you staring know, back at me.
The eyes were like two voids. It wasn't even, it was like there was nothing there. They were like black blackness, holes. Yeah.
And like in the distance, you see like a shiny diamond or something.
It's like you were staring into some sort of other universe.
You stare long enough.
In each eye socket.
And he's got you.
Yeah, and I felt drawn in. He may have taken me out there. Luckily, you were keeping him distracted.
Right.
Yeah.
So you're swinging this mace around.
Mm-hmm.
And it was... You're no jabroni when mm-hmm. it comes to wielding a mace.
No, this is not my first barbecue.
23 years ago... You and I start a medieval fighting school where we go to different grade schools and middle schools, teach about anti-bullying, teach kids about the weapons used in the Middle Ages. You have the sword, you have the mace, yeah, antlers, mm-hmm. yeah, and pretty much anything you could use. Battle ram, spears, rocks, yeah. Anything you could use. And we would take the kids aside and say, listen, this is what you use on bullies. And we, huge, huge fanfare in the 70s and 80s. We never went to high schools. After the lawsuit about the kid that stabbed all of those kids, we ended up putting it aside. That being said, this wasn't our first barbecue when it comes to medieval swordplay and knight play. And you have a mace.
Mm-hmm.
You're swinging it. And the way you swing it is, if I could try and explain mm-hmm. it, you take it behind you, you figure eights, and then from there you have enough inertia, if I'm saying that right,
mm-hmm.
to really throw some energy at it.
Yeah.
And your blows were not like for the extremities, you were going straight for the heart.
Yeah, you want to hit a body blow with that mace. I mean, that's really where you're going to do some damage.
Watching boxing, because body blows are important, body shots are underrated. You can knock someone out just with body shots. You don't need a headshot.
Mm-hmm.
You can knock someone out with about 1,000 jabs. You don't need a uppercut or like a true punch. Body shots are underrated. You knew that. And you're going straight for its heart, kidneys, if it has kidneys, stomach, throat. It was amazing.
Yeah, one thing people don't realize, too, one of the first mistakes people make with a mace is that they'll just try to use their arm strength alone to swing it around, but really you need to use your whole entire body.
Hips, legs, ankles.
Everything is in sync and everything mm-hmm. is being used, and that's where the real power comes in as well.
With the mace, let me try to describe this mace to everyone. It's a metal handle. It's like a 15-foot chain.
It's a 13 and a half foot.
13 and a half. And you forged these chain links.
Yeah, this is a mace that I had made.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because I had, like we talked about before, I had done some blacksmithing.
Now, right. Yeah. Now, we're keeping the distance of this Balrog, because it's a dangerous foe. We need to take a break. I dropped my nunchucks, because they're only about, give me 3 feet of action.
Yeah.
So I pull out my two bull whips. Remember those?
Mm-hmm.
And I light them on fire, because that's what you do with bull whips. So, listeners, just imagine this. Dutch is using a mace. It's absolutely, it's captivating. I'm using a bullwhip just to keep it off balance. I'm trying to trip it, which I can't. This thing is solid. And why don't you explain the next go-around? Because, I mean, we're using weapons left and right.
Mm-hmm.
It's as if, it's like the fight from a Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, that one scene.
Where she just keeps picking up all the
every
different...
Every single different... Oh, that's... Yeah. I love that movie.
That's really...
They're coming out with a sequel.
Are they really?
Yeah, Netflix. I think it's a Netflix
It's already
original.
Out. It's already out, yeah.
Sword of Destiny. The, Green Destiny? Is that the name of the sword?
The Green Destiny sword?
Destiny, something like
something
that.
Something like that. Stupid name. Not like the Sorcerer's Eye.
It probably sounds cooler, like in the actual original language.
Oh, in Chinese? Okay.
Yeah. So anyway, I do land some really good blows, and if
you
this
cracked
thing,
his breastplate, let's just, I'm going to give you the credit.
Oh, for sure. There was definitely whatever, if you want to call it blood, was coursing through this thing. Some
it was
of
black,
that was,
and then it steamed off. It was weird.
Some of that was visible. This armor was slowly being broken down.
You know what you said? You may not remember this. I said, is that blood? You told me, if it bleeds, we could kill it. It's like, where did I hear that before?
Yeah.
Brian, go.
We're making headway. We're making real headway. And you were still landing blows with your bullwhips, too. But you put one away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When you use two weapons and two hands, you're not going to have... It's good fighting coordination. That's why the person with one sword against the person with two always has the advantage. So I thought, let's use this bullwhip. I kind of took the fire off of it, and I was going for the neck, thinking, let's lance it around the neck.
Mm-hmm.
So I put the other one away. It was just attached to my hip, like Dr. Jones. And I'm like hitting the neck a lot, trying to whip it around. Problem is, he gets wise to it, he grabs the whip, yanks it from me, throws it.
Mm-hmm. And then,
This is one of the toughest fights I've ever had.
Oh, this is easy.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, no question. One of the longest fights, too.
Mm-hmm.
Except for that one fight we had in, Burma.
That's a guy that could control cobras, right?
I mean, come on.
Yeah.
What are you gonna do? But, you pull out your other whip. He's, like you said, he's wise to it.
He's got my timing down. Once you have the timing down on someone using a whip, forget it.
And I am trying to get more, momentum into my swing of my next swing of the mace. You crack the whip at it, but like you said, he has the timing down, he grabs it.
Yeah.
And before any of us realize what's going on, you or I, yanks on the whip and you're still holding on.
I hang on to it.
And he grabs you
right
by your shirt.
Now it's grappling. Now it's about grappling.
Mm-hmm.
All fights. You want to be a good fighter, you learn wrestling first. Because almost all fights end up on the ground. You watch UFC today. Who are the champions? They're the wrestlers. Or the people who do jiu-jitsu. But wrestling is always going to be the superior martial art. It just always is. I mean, you wrestled competitively.
Getting close.
So, I have no weapons on me. Except all the knowledge I learned as a wrestler.
Mm-hmm.
So he grabs me. First of all, can we explain? His breath was terrible. I almost want to say, listen, man, your breath is terrible. But I was kind of facing death. He grabs me, and you know what I notice?
What's that?
What I notice at the, like, because, of course, we know what I notice, but the listeners don't. I saw it around his neck.
There it was.
That's where it was. The entire time. The
entire time.
The chain was thick, and it was as if it was glowing, or I don't know what, but it seemed to be like almost the source of his power, or the source of great power. What I saw was a fist-size medallion, and it was red. And the outer shell looked a lot like a diamond. And it was almost glowing intermittently, as if it was a heartbeat, like on and off.
Mm-hmm. It was pulsing.
It was pulsing, exactly. I grab it. I don't know what to do. He throws me, but before he throws me, I mean, he like is about to pick me up. Notice something on him, and you said, George, look at his hip. Look at the hip. He had a pick on him. A pick, like for prospecting mm-hmm. or digging.
A mining pick.
Mining pick. I looked at it, I was like, that looks really familiar. Really familiar. And it's a larger pick than usual. So I try and grab it, and he's just trying to choke me out, and so I grab the pick. He throws me. I put my elbow all the way into the necklace, the chain.
Mm-hmm.
When he throws me, the chain breaks, and I have what we'll tell the listeners now is the sorcerer's eye. Throws me, I get thrown right into you.
Mm-hmm.
We are dazed.
Yeah.
I mean, you talk about seeing stars. Explain the seeing stars, because
seeing stars, it really is as it's described. You just see these lights.
Looney Tunes gets it right.
They really do.
Street Fighter gets it right. We were in a daze.
In a daze. Because that was a hard throw. I mean, when you grabbed the Sorcerer's Eye, I thought I had seen this thing enraged.
Yeah.
But when you grabbed that necklace,
it roared.
All bets were off.
It roared, and I could not hear.
Yeah.
Now I throw the Sorcerer's Eye, the jewel. You have the pick, and it was just like clockwork. The Sorcerer's Eye, hits the side of the cave. You throw the pick at it. And how do we describe this? Because it's hard to.
And up to this point, too, I don't even know why I threw the pick.
Neither do I.
It's like it was like an out-of-body experience.
Providence?
The pick was in my hand, and all of a sudden, I'm throwing it at the Sorcerer's Eye.
Well, it seemed like the thing to do. What would you do? Here, let's just leave it. We'll put it to you, listeners. What would you do? You're fighting a demon giant. You're in a cave for 19 months. You find what you're looking for, and you see a very familiar mining pick on this mortal enemy. So you throw the jewel. You throw the pick. That's the only option. You know, in the books, the Choose Your Own Adventure story, it narrows it down to this one option. You throw the pick of the jewel. That should be a hashtag. All of a sudden, I mean, all of a sudden, it almost looks like a miniature tornado.
That's exactly how I was going to describe it. It was like there was a tornado in the room.
It was the wind. You think the Balrog was a force of nature. The wind pushed us against the wall as if there was like a ton of weights on us.
Mm-hmm.
Like you're in, you know, at the carnival, when you go on that one thing.
The spinny thing.
That spinny thing that always makes you sick, but you still go in it because you don't want to disappoint your date. All of a sudden, it's getting bigger and bigger. And we're holding on to things because it's starting to suck things up. The Balrog is actually struggling. And it's moving a little bit. Out of nowhere, we hear this. We hear someone say this. second. 1 second.
Did you explain the light? We didn't explain the light.
Can you explain it?
When... So not only did this wind pick up, when the pick hit the sorcerer's eye, but there was also this light. Really, the only way to describe it is this portal. That's what it looked like. It looked like some sort of... Think of any comic book or any movie you've ever seen where some sort of, you know, otherworldly portal opens up.
Yeah.
And that's what it looked like. And for a second, I thought I saw some shadow, but...
Yeah, enormous shadow. Right behind us, what do we hear? What do we hear? This is what I hear. It says, open up. It isn't a fit night out for man or beasts. And we gotta say his name together. We see Yukon.
Yukon.
Cornelius! It was his pick the entire time.
His pick.
I mean, he's like, he's as if he's our savior. He turns to us, and what does he tell you about the portal? What I remember, he says, the portal's gonna close soon.
Mm.
Hold on for dear life. The Balrog's one weakness is it sinks. And out of nowhere, it's as if he lets go and he grabs onto the Balrog. Now they start spinning. As if they're in a whirlpool, but it's the air, it's the cave.
The Balrog is screaming.
Screaming! Like
shrieking.
Abject terror. First time I've ever seen it. Have you ever seen a demon giant scared?
When Yukon first saved us out of the avalanche.
Yeah.
And when we spent that time with him in Canada, I knew there was something very different and very special about this man. But everything I thought I knew was completely just turned upside down.
He's a guardian angel. A guardian angel. So he's flying towards this portal. And he says again, as if he's taunting the portal, he says, it's time to close. This is not a fight for man or beast. And he points to us, as he's holding the Balrog, there are men. Here's the beast. And he swallows up, and he gives us the thumbs up. And they disappear! They absolutely disappear. What went through your mind when the portal closed?
First of all, when the portal closed, there was silence.
Deafening silence. I could hear my heartbeat.
The wind completely stopped immediately. Yeah. The room turned from this glowing fiery red to this just cool, soft, glowing blue, blue color. What was going through my mind?
I was like, is it over? Like, I was ready for round two. Like, is it coming back? Will Yukon come back? Maybe.
At that point, what was going through my mind is destiny. And I knew at that moment that I had not completed my journey.
Yeah.
I had not fulfilled yet my destiny. Nope. And I still had work to do on this earth.
God, I couldn't put it better. One of the best parts of this story is Sorcerer's Eye is on the ground. We picked it up. Here's where things get a little dicey, though. Okay. We're in America now. There's no treaty between us and Nicaragua when it comes to... I wouldn't call it a crime, but we kind of kept the Sorcerer's Eye.
I'd say we earned it.
I think we did. I mean, we went through customs. We'll get to that later. But they let us leave the country with it. It's in an undisclosed place right now. We're not going to say where it is. People will try and get it. But I think we earned it. First thing that went through my mind once I knew the fight was over was, do you think we need to go back now? We were almost 20 months in this cave. I mean, I don't want to even get into getting out of this cave. That's a whole other podcast.
We left a lot unexplored.
Yeah. Yeah, we did.
But it's kind of like when you get to the end of a video game.
Sure.
And you beat it.
Yeah.
And maybe you rushed through it.
Yeah. You gotta go back.
Do you really want to go back? Yeah, sometimes, I mean, sometimes you do.
Sometimes you want to go back and open up a different door. Sometimes you want to try another adventure and make different choices.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what that is? That's life. What is a rounding third? What type of scotch were we drinking during this fight? Because we were loaded.
In a good way.
In a great way.
In a sustaining way.
What I was drinking in my flask was, it was Lagavulin 12. It's got a good peat to it. Smoky. Figure you have smoky scotch to fight a smoky demon giant.
Mm-hmm.
What were you drinking?
Mine was my own scotch, actually, that I made.
Yeah.
Some batch that I had laid down for about 15 years. And,
yeah.
You know, figured, hey, you know, I'll bring this cask.
Was that cherry wood cask?
Yeah.
Is that cherry? Oh, my gosh. Yeah. That was amazing.
It was really good.
I had some, but I thought, you made it. It's yours. You don't ask a man for his own scotch.
You know what?
You don't carve a man's turkey. You don't drive a man's car.
I have two more barrels of it. One of them's got your name on it.
That's exciting. It's the most exciting I've ever felt. I think ever. What was the most essential tool for this fight? For this part of the fight?
For this part of the fight? My most essential tool, we've talked about it.
Yeah.
Already.
Yeah.
And I have to say it was the whisker dam.
I love that thing. Just looking at it, it makes me pleased to be an American and to be alive
mm-hmm.
because of innovations like this. It keeps the earth turning.
It's 100% copper, too.
It's a conduit. It's a conductant.
It kept my mustache dry,
yeah,
and free of suds during the battle, which helped me to keep my focus.
Mm-hmm.
How about you?
It's not a tool per se, but it really is. The tool I think that most benefited me during this last part of the fight, I think, was my credit score. Because you cannot get a good loan on a house, on a car, without a solid 800 credit score. And I'd been working really hard to
mm-hmm.
get it up. It's about being responsible, Dutch.
Oh, yeah. We pay our debts.
Absolutely.
We always pay our debts.
Yeah, we do. On a side note, I just feel like I need to acknowledge a couple things that's been going on in the world. One, our lieutenant governor, his wife had a baby. They named him Dutch.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even need to explain why. And listeners, if you need an explanation, then try a different podcast. That's one. Two, there's a single malt scotch shortage. And at first, I felt like we should apologize for it.
Mm-hmm.
You raise a really good point. We absolutely should not. We are going to be stockpiling and making our own, but for the next decade, there is going to be a single malt scotch shortage. So what I'd like to tell the listeners is, why don't you drink the blended scotch and let the real men drink the single malt, okay? I mean, Johnny Walker's okay. That's good blended scotch. But anything else, you know. I equate blended scotch to, like, when kids go to 7-Eleven and they mix their Slurpees. Mm. Let's make cherry Coke. Let's not. Let's make cherry. Let's make Coke. Let your yes be yes. Let your no be no. If you're lukewarm, I'm going to spit you right in my mouth. And that's scripture.
Yeah.
How do you want to end this?
There was another artifact that we brought back.
Yeah.
Which will lead us into more and more stories. But it was UConn's pick.
Yeah.
UConn's pick was laying on the ground. Mm-hmm. Next to the Sorcerer's Eye. And, you know, we have been on a journey to reconnect with UConn. An unending journey. We've been trying to reconnect with UConn for a long time. That was the second time that he saved our life.
Yeah. What's going to be interesting is round three, Star Trek. Sometimes
I grow so tired. Great episode.
Dylan the Dutch, out.
But got him at the evil one.